While we'll be celebrating Independence Day here in America tomorrow, halfway around the world, July 4th also marks a national holiday in Rwanda, though it's a much more somber occasion. Current state producer Joe Lindstroth is here with more. Hi, Joe.
Mark?
So Rwandans in Rwanda tomorrow is called Liberation Day. Is that it?
Exactly. July 4th in Rwanda is a national holiday that marks the end of the country's official mourning period for the more than 1 million people who were murdered during the genocide there in 1994. And this year, of course, is the 20th anniversary of those horrific 100 days. Mm-hmm. Over the last two decades since the Rwandan genocide, we've heard many inspiring stories of survival and perseverance, and we have actually one more for you today with an MSU connection.
Okay.
In 2007, Laura Apal, an associate professor in the College of Education, went over to Kigali, Rwanda's capital, to hold a therapy writing workshop for a handful of survivors of the genocide. She subsequently wrote a book of poems based on her experience called Requiem Rwanda. Laura has stayed in touch with a number of her students, including Louise Marie Mukamwezi. Louise was just a child when her entire family, her mother, her father, and three younger brothers were murdered in their home on June 6, 1994. She managed to escape. She's now working with orphans in Kigali and getting her master's degree in public health in English. And Louise credits the writing workshop with helping her move on from this pretty horrific personal tragedy. I recently spoke with both Laura and Louise about the healing power of writing. And I first asked Laura how she managed to find herself in Rwanda helping people write about memories most of us can't even imagine.
I'm a writer. And I lived in Oklahoma at the time of the bombing of the Murrah Building. And I saw afterwards the kinds of writing that people did. People who didn't generally do writing suddenly wanted to write poems and share poems. And it convinced me of the healing power of writing. Both as a writer, I experienced that, and as a teacher of writing, I experienced that. And so when I was approached in 2006 by a colleague who said, would you be interested in working in Rwanda on some sort of a healing project, I thought immediately about using writing for healing. And we went to Rwanda and collaborated with Rwandan colleagues there. And together we planned a Writing for Healing workshop.
Tell me about the workshop. How did you run it?
So our team, which had a psychiatrist and a pediatrician and myself, created a model from our experiences that combined a therapeutic model for writing with a process writing approach. So that one of the things about using writing for healing is that there's power in people who have experienced trauma going back in a safe space and interacting, repeating, going into, coming back out of that experience and realizing that it doesn't have to overwhelm them. So the therapeutic model had people write about their lives before genocide, before the trauma, during the time of the trauma, the genocide, and then after the trauma. But the writing process approach also asked people to go through several stages of writing. So they did personal, private writing at first and increasingly worked on the writing to make it more public. So it meant that the participants in our workshop went through their experience writing several times, which gave them a feeling of control and would give them a feeling that it was safe to encounter those feelings and ideas.
Let's bring in one of your participants in your workshop. Louise Marie Mukamwezi is joining us from Kigali, Rwanda.
Yeah.
Louise, why did you decide to participate in Laura's workshop?
I know Laura with that team from America. They were looking for the survivor of genocide. So that time, I was charged in psychosocial and welfare of children. So I thought maybe it will help me to do my job. I have never think that will help myself.
Laura mentioned that she asked you and the other participants in the workshop to start writing about before the genocide and memories that came before the genocide. What memories came to mind for you, Louise?
That time, Lola was the first person who asked me about my life before genocide. From the end of genocide until we did the project. You and a friend asked me, how was genocide? Where did you hide for survive? How your family have been killed? Every time I said bad after talking with them and with many questions. Why my family didn't manage to survive? Why didn't I accept to die with them and so on? But when Lola asked me, how are you remembered that time? I remembered many good memories.
And Louise, what can you share some of those good memories with us? What came to mind?
Yeah, memories is like how my mom every night before genocide came in our room to see how we are, how our father cooked during the party, how my parents bring me to school, how they did all their best for helping me to grow up.
Louise, it sounds like you had a special relationship with your father. What was that like?
Yeah, my father was not only my father, he was really my best friend. I have many memories to my father, but the first things I remember, he promised me to put me in the radio.
He promised to put you in the radio.
Yeah. Because that time I was a kid, I didn't know that the radio is the things, the technology, things like that. I knew that the person lived there in the radio. So every time, because my father loved the radio, I asked him, can you put me inside? Then he will always listen me what I'm talking, what I'm dancing, everything.
You mentioned that before you met Laura, no one had asked you about your memories before the genocide. How about you, Louise? Did you ever think much about your memories before the genocide?
Before Lola, I have never. Anyways, the people asked me about genocide, how I managed to live without family, the things like that. But like Lola asked me about that, my memories before genocide. I really found it, even if they were bad things in my life, but also they are good and best things I lived before. So it always gives me the strength of going ahead, of surviving again.
You're listening to Current State. I'm Joe Lindstroth, and I'm speaking with Laura Apal. She's an FSU associate professor in education who held a writing workshop in Rwanda for survivors of the genocide. And joining us by phone from Rwanda is Louise Marie Mukamweze, who participated in Laura's workshop back in 2007. Laura, how does Louise's experience of writing about her memories before genocide compare with the others in your workshop? You know, she had just mentioned that no one had really asked her about her memories before the genocide, even among her friends. Was this a pretty typical experience?
My sense of it is that for a lot of people, their experiences parallel what Louise is talking about, that there's a great deal of attention that's paid to the trauma of the genocide and to the great effort of survivors who are coming out of the genocide, and that very few people do have an opportunity to think about their lives before genocide. And part of the therapeutic model was that by beginning with those memories, that there could be healing by moving from the original life before genocide through the trauma and then to the other side. So Louise talks about how happy it made her to remember her family in that way in her life, and several of the other participants said the same thing, although some of the participants also felt very sad revisiting that time. So it wasn't always a happy feeling, but it was for many of them a healing feeling.
What were your biggest challenges in getting people to write about their experiences? I can't imagine that was easy.
So I think that asking people to re-enter a part of their lives that for many reasons represents trauma to them and very often represents great unhappiness, horror, fear, requires a lot of trust. And I think that for many of our participants, it was an issue of trust all around. They had to trust us as facilitators. They had to trust the process that we were entering and asking them to enter with us. They had to trust each other and the kinds of stories that they were telling each other, the ways they were processing things with each other. And they really needed to trust themselves, that it was safe to go into some of these memories and that they were strong enough to come through it and come back out on the other side.
Louise, then Laura had you move on to write about the actual genocide. What was that like for you? Mm-hmm. What was that like for you to write about those memories?
I wrote all of the pictures of my brothers with my parents. Even when Laura came, I didn't remember their faces. But when Laura came to the hearing by writing, I did the pictures. I write all the memories from my brothers, from my mom and my dad.
Louise, how is writing about what happened different than talking about it?
Yeah, they are different because when the people when they asking you about genocide, they need to know how the people came to kill you, how your parents died. It was every time the bad experience. But the writing, you always write everything you remember. So many times you remember the good things, how God did good things, how your parents did good things.
You're listening to Current State. I'm Joe Lindstroth, and I'm speaking with Laura Apal. She's an MSU Associate Professor in Education who has held a writing workshop in Rwanda for survivors of the genocide. And joining us by phone from Rwanda is one of Laura's participants in the workshop, Louise Marie Mukumweze. Laura, hearing stories like Louise's, you were inspired to write a book of poems called Requiem Rwanda. Why poetry?
For me as a poet, poetry is a way that I make sense of the world. So I wrote initially because I was overwhelmed by the many feelings and the emotions that I experienced in Rwanda working with survivors. But as a poet, I also view poetry as a form of social activism, as something that I can do to make a difference in the world. And I myself had trouble imagining the kinds of numbers and the kinds of statistics that were coming out of Rwanda after the genocide. 800,000 or a million people dying in 100 days was something that I really couldn't take in. But I could think about one person's story, one person moving on in life. So for me, poetry became a way to take what were statistics that were beyond my imagining and turn them into stories that I thought could communicate on a human level and give a human face to what I was learning.
And one of these people that you wrote about in your book was Louise. Will you share the poem with us?
I will. Joe, I want to tell you a little bit about the story of where the poem came from, because over the years I've gone back to Rwanda 8 or 9 times since 2006, and I've continued to go back to do my poetry writing, and each time I make sure that I see as many of the people that I worked with as I can, and Louise is someone that I see every time when I go back. So I've seen her over these years change from her very first writing and her life at that time to where she is now. On one of the visits, Louise asked me if I would be able to stay a little bit longer because the bones of her parents and her family were being moved from a mass grave to a memorial site. And this is quite common right now in Rwanda that people's remains, it's very important in Rwanda that the remains of loved ones are treated with respect. And so it's very important that someone knows where their loved ones are buried. And Louise's family was going to be placed in a memorial. And so she asked me if I could stay and go along. And I wasn't able to do that. I needed to come back to Michigan. But I thought a lot. I was very honored that Louise asked me if I could stay and that she told me the story of what would be happening with her family. And so I wrote a poem about it. And the poem is called Dry Bones. And it begins with a verse from the Old Testament from Ezekiel 37 that says, "This is what the Sovereign Lord says, my people, I am going to open your graves and bring you up from them. I will bring you back to the land of Israel." Dry bones. For 16 years, Louise has carried her family in her heart. Without warning, a memory will intrude, a piece of cloth, a turn of head, a bit of song. This is a fire she must feed to keep from going out. Now her parents will have a proper burial. Their bones will be moved from mass grave to memorial site. There will be a service, remembrance, stories, prayers. Louise says she will accompany her parents' bones on the move, as if anyone could know which are the remains of her family, as if at the new site anyone could keep track. But Louise has great faith. God and her parents will know. The reburial will take 3 days. As she walks with her parents across the valley of dry bones, will flesh and blood once more take shape in her mind? She does not remember her mother's hands, her father's voice, their smiles, their eyes. She cannot forgive them for dying. She does not want to know who the murderers were, has no wish for restitution. Who can restore what was taken? She does not know how to say that her once hollow self has grown strong, that her only wish now is for memory to rest, for ash to be ash, so at last she can let burn down the fire she has tended all these years.
Thank you for sharing that, Laura. Louise, how does hearing this poem about you make you feel?
Yeah, the poem is like my picture. It's the Louise who really lived the hard life, but always loved. So I love reading the poem.
And Louise, do you remember when I came to Rwanda and I showed you the poem and I said it would be in a book? And then you, I asked you if you wanted your name on the poem or if you wanted me to give you a different name.
Yeah, I said there's no problem because it's really a strong and brave Louise. There is no problem. You can put my name.
Laura, what has drawn you to Louise in particular?
Well, I think you can hear that Louise has lived through something that is hard for many of us to imagine. But she has a great heart. She has a brave spirit. She has great courage and great generosity, great love for the orphan children that she works with. And she's willing to take the risks of being connected to people, of sharing her journey and her story. And all of those things are things that have made me have great admiration for her. And I feel honored that I get to spend time with her and that she trusts me with the conversations that we have and the work that we do together.
Louise, how are you doing now?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm doing master's in public health. I have degree in clinical psychology. From that time, my life has been meaningful to me. And I wish to live long and realize my dream and father's dreams to me. So I'm really glad.
And Laura, how has your time in Rwanda affected you? How are you different today?
Well, for one thing, if before I went to Rwanda, I believed in the healing power of writing, I believe even more in that that writing does have power to move people and to heal people. Sometimes it's been hard to be part of this project. When I've been in Rwanda, there are times when I feel very alone and when I feel sad thinking about some unimaginable things that have happened to people that I care about, people that I will never know, and that can be overwhelming. But when I also get to meet people like Louise, like the other survivors that I've worked with, I also recognize unimaginable courage and strength, and I feel grateful and I feel honored to get to be part of their lives and to get to share this work with them.
Laura Apel is an MSU Associate Professor in Education who held a writing workshop in Rwanda for survivors of the genocide back in 2007. And Louise Marie Mukumwezi was one of Laura's participants and is now completing her master's degree in public health. And she joined us from Kigali, Rwanda. Thank you both for talking with me today.
Thank you, Joe. And thank you, Louise.
Welcome.